ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
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 श्रीमद् भागवतम कैंटो 2 चैप्टर 2 टेक्स्ट 16 ट्रांसलेशन एंड कमेंट्री बाय हिज डिवाइन ग्रेस श्रील एसी भक्तिवेदांत स्वामी प्रभुपाद। Here's the verse. Manah svabhudhyamalaya niyamya kshetragya etang ninayet tam atmani atmanam atmanyavarudhyodhiro labdho prashantya virameta krityat. Translation. Thereafter. I don't mean you to, I'm just taking a pause, but not asking you to repeat. I was just looking to see what the previous verse says. This is Canto 2, Chapter 2, Text 16. Yeah. Oh, there's plenty of space over there. Okay, if we need more space, then we can all move that way. Yeah. Thereafter, the yogi should merge his mind by his unalloyed intelligence into the living entity and then merge the living entity into the super self. And by doing this, the fully satisfied living entity becomes situated in the supreme stage of satisfaction, so that he ceases from all other activities. Purport. The functions of the mind are thinking, feeling, and willing. When the mind is materialistic or absorbed in material contact, it acts for material advancement of knowledge, destructively ending in discovery of nuclear weapons. But when the mind acts under spiritual urge, it acts wonderfully for going back home, back to Godhead, for life in complete bliss and eternity. Therefore, the mind has to be manipulated by good and unalloyed intelligence. Perfect intelligence is to render service unto the Lord. One should be intelligent enough to understand that the living being is, in all circumstances, a servant of the circumstances. Every living being is serving the dictates of desire, anger, lust, illusion, insanity, and enviousness, all materially affected. But even while executing such dictations of different temperaments, he is perpetually unhappy. When one actually feels this and turns his intelligence to inquiring about it from the right sources, he gets information of the transcendental loving service of the Lord. Instead of serving materially for the above mentioned different humors of the body, the living entity's intelligence then becomes freed from the unhappy illusion of materialistic temperament, and thus by unalloyed intelligence the mind is brought into the service of the Lord. The Lord and his service are identical, being on the absolute plane. Therefore, the unalloyed intelligence and the mind are merged into the Lord, and thus the living entity does not remain a seer himself, but becomes seen by the Lord transcendentally. When the living entity is directly seen by the Lord dictates to him to act according to his desire. H, capital H, his, the Lord's desire. And when the living entity follows him perfectly, the living entity ceases to discharge any other duty for his illusory satisfaction. In his pure unalloyed state, the living being attains the stage of full bliss, labdho prashanti, and ceases all material hankerings. Om jnana timirandhasya jnananjana shalakaya chakshurin nilitam yena tasmai shri gurave namah. Nama Shreshtam Manamapi Shachiputra Matra Swarupam Rupam Tasya Gajamurupurim Maturim Goshtavatim Radha kundam girivaramaho radhika madhavasham prapto yasya pratita kripaya shri gurum tam natosmi. Vandeham shri guru shriyatah padagamalam shri gurun vaishnavamscha shri rupam sagrajatam sahagana raghunatam vitam tam sajivam Sadvaitam Savadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Sri Vishakham Vitams Cha Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. Now, those of you who regularly read Srila Prabhupada's books and go through these books will find that in this purport, many points are discussed which have been discussed many times in other purports also. And we may wonder why that is so. Why is the same thing being said again and again and again? It's a different system of education to the what we consider to be a systematic, logical system of education as in the modern education, where the idea is to get you to understand everything by the mind. But spiritual education works not only on the mind, but on the whole outlook, the whole consciousness. And many points require to be repeated again and again, just so that we can grasp them. Intellectually, we may grasp them. But because, since time immemorial, our consciousness has been absorbed in a wrong conception of life, the bodily conception of life. I am the body. Acting for this body is in my interest. Therefore, we have to hear again and again and again that I am not the body, I am not this mind. I am spirit, soul, internal center, Krishna. And although Srila Prabhupada discusses these points that he's discussed before, that every time when he discusses them, it's from a somewhat different angle, a somewhat different emphasis, and every time we find it's very powerful for our edification and purification. The particular point being made here is about the mind, purification of the mind. This verse and the purport reminds us of a famous verse from Bhagavad Gita. Here in this verse, which I just read, you may wonder why I'm reading it. You ask me which is the verse. It's not a oft-quoted verse. Srila Prabhupada didn't quote it. At least there's no record of him quoting it, apart from when he particularly translated it here, but I chose it because it's on this subject of the mind, and there's a much more, well, there are many more well-known verses, but I chose it as an example of how Srila Prabhupada and the Shastra itself repeats the same topics again and again and again from different angles, from different perspectives, so that we can become convinced. That's why it's very good to repeatedly state that which we theoretically know. We are not the body, we are eternal servants of Krishna. And one day we might actually get it. We might actually get a eureka. I am not this body, I'm an eternal. When we said it again and again and again, the penny might drop, as the saying goes. So this, in this verse, the word Atma or Atman comes three times. And Srila Prabhupada translates it twice as the self with a lowercase s and once as the super self. It's a common misconception among transcendentalists in the Vedic tradition to presume that the self and the super self are the same. In other words, or the Atma and Brahma are the same. Now this is a bit of a complex discussion, even linguistically, because the term Atma can be used to mean the living being or God, and Brahma can also mean the living being or the all-pervading reality and God. So it's often presumed by Indian transcendentalists that the individual living being is God. He just has to realize it. Which is, as Srila Prabhupada has very kindly many times pointed out to us, nonsense. Although it might sound very sophisticated, it's actually nonsense. And there would be translators of this who would take this to mean that the self is God. We are God. We just have to realize it. As Srila Prabhupada pointed out, with very simple logic, which great scholars and great yogis can't understand, we're not God. If we have to realize that we're God, that means we're not God. If we have to come to a higher level, that means that we're under the power of, we're under some power that's higher than us, which means we're not God, because God means the Supreme. It's a very simple logic. The great transcendentalists, they don't get it. Why? Because they're envious of Krishna. Ultimately, they're envious of Krishna. And that's our problem too. That's all our problems. All of our problems stem from not fully accepting or not accepting that we are eternal servants of Krishna. We're simply meant to serve Krishna. That's all. It's a very simple thing. Individually, all our problems can be solved. Socially, internationally, all the problems can be solved. The United Nations can be dissolved. There's no need for any United Nations. There's no need for any nations. Why should any nation be separate from another? It's all on the basis that this land is my land, this land is your land. Is there, there's some song like this? But your land is not the Russians' land. It's my land and your land. You're a U.S. Show me the passport. U.S. citizen? Okay. And someone else? Not okay. So, this land is my land, this your land is your land. It's God's land, it's not your land at all. So the whole concept of nationalism is just on the basis of bodily consciousness. Extended bodily consciousness. So I was saying the word Atma comes three times in this verse. And the same or similar topics are discussed in a verse of Bhagavad Gita in which the word Atma is again comes up three or four times, that Atmaiva Atmano Bandhu Udhared Atman Atmanam Udhared Atman Atmanam Atmanam Avasadiyat Atmaiva Atmanam bandhu atmaiva ripur atmanaha. In one short verse, the word Atma comes on six times. And it requires to be explained to us, because the word Atma can mean different things in different contexts. So this verse means that one should elevate oneself by his mind and not degrade oneself. The mind is the greatest friend of the living being and the greatest enemy also. Can be. It can be our greatest friend or can be our worst enemy. Sometimes we hear the statement, we're the victim of the mind, a victim of the senses, and it sounds very strange. Because how people identify with the mind, how can you talk about your mind as if it's something different from you? How can our mind be our enemy? Because I am my mind. What my mind does is what I want to do. That's the problem, thinking like that. Not understanding this spiritual science causes us so many problems because we identify with the mind. I am unhappy. I'm just saying, I'm not actually feeling unhappy. You understood that. Okay. So I am unhappy. Then we become convinced. I am unhappy. Or we think, oh, now I won the lottery, I'm happy. You think, well, I should be happy. What happens when you win the lottery? You go on TV and you look happy, and that's happy. It puts us on a very superficial platform of identifying with the mind. The idea that by getting things that are pleasing to my mind, I'll be happy. And by getting things that are unpleasing, I'll be unhappy. The mind is the center of all the senses. During this short stay here, I've spoken a lot about the senses. The mind is the center of all the senses. All the senses, the sense of touching, tasting, smelling, feeling, hearing, they're all processed via the mind. Therefore, Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Namai Vangsho Jiva Loke Jiva Bhuta Sanatana Mana Shashtani Indriyani Prakriti Sthani Karshati. All living beings are part of me, Krishna says, but in this material world they're struggling very hard with the six senses, beginning with the mind. So the mind, as Srila Prabhupada writes here, the functions of the mind are thinking, feeling, and willing. So if we accept that I am the body, and I have to enjoy via the senses, so then comes the function of thinking about sense gratification. Then we think, meditate on it more and more and more, and then, okay, I'll do it. Sankalpa vikalpa. The functions of the mind are also grouped into sankalpa and vikalpa. It means to accept that which we think is favorable for our happiness and to reject or to that which we think is unfavorable. So we might not want to go out in the winter in Detroit dressed in the same way as we go out in the summer and vice versa. We don't want to dress. You don't want to dress in heavy winter clothes in the summer. Because in the winter, to go in the cold, you want warm clothes because it feels uncomfortable even with the warm clothes, and without them, it's probably not only uncomfortable, but dangerous. You could get frostbite or just die from the cold. Does it get so cold here, is it? I would imagine. Is it? Yeah. Is that Celsius? Oh, what's that in Celsius?
It's pretty close, 25.
Minus 25, yeah, that's pretty cold. Yeah. I've been in colder. I've been in Russia in the winter. At some point, minus 30. It's dangerously cold. So we... our whole tendency, the whole function of the mind in material consciousness is to try to... ladies, please, sitting here. Oh, she needs a chair. In material consciousness, we presume that, first of all, we don't even recognize that the mind is an instrument. That I am not the mind, the material mind. And we presume that its business is to accept that which is favorable for my sense gratification and to try to avoid that which is unfavorable. And sometimes we have to make a compromise. Just like, for instance, going to work. You don't want to go to work, but you go to work to get the money so you can support your whole system of sense gratification. Now, you might have heard when we say we accept that which is favorable for our sense gratification and reject that which is unfavorable for our sense gratification. Now, this parallels what? Can you remember? Accept that which is favorable. Anukulyasya sankalpa pratikulyasya vajanam. These are the first two angas or limbs of sharanagati, surrendering to Krishna. Our determination should be, we want to advance in Krishna consciousness. If we're serious about it, we have to accept everything that is favorable for advancing in Krishna consciousness and reject everything that is unfavorable. But in material consciousness, we accept everything without systematically considering it. We accept everything which we think will make me happy via the senses and reject everything which obstructs that. And in this way we become a victim of the mind, victim of the senses. If we say this, it is easy words to understand. There's no difficult words. We're not using difficult words like hermeneutics, ontology, no difficult words. Victim of the mind. Very easy words to understand. What does it mean? Victim of the mind. The words are easy to understand. What does it mean? Whoever thought of being a victim of the mind? Who even thinks like that? It's a concept which is not in the normal way of thinking. How can you be a victim of the mind? Because I am my mind and my mind works for me. First of all, we don't think of the mind as being something separate from me. And then the mind does what I want. But then when we take the devotional service, then we find out that as Lord Jesus Christ said, I believe, it's definitely from the Bible, that the spirit is willing but the flesh is weak. Is that Jesus said that? St. Paul said that. The spirit is willing but the flesh is weak. In other words, we have a desire to do what is good, but is this how it's understood? But the flesh, the senses, the body pulls us to do that which is not proper. The same question Arjuna asks in Bhagavad Gita. Atha kena prayuktayam papam charati purushaha anichan api varshaya baladi vandiyojita. Arjuna asks a very good question to Krishna. That why is it that we want to be good, but we do bad things, even though we don't want to, even though we know that it's wrong? Why is that? And the answer, Sri Bhagavan Uvacha, Kama Esha, Krodha Esha, Rajoguna Samudbhavaha, Mahashano Mahapapma, Vidhyenami Havayanam. I just read this verse this morning. It is due to lust, which transforms into wrath. I learned a new word today, wrath, which is the, Kama Esha Krodha, which is born from the mode of passion and which is the all-devouring Mahashana. Literally means it eats it up. Great eater. Literally means devours us. And very sinful. Mahapapma. Vidhi, you should know that this is definitely our enemy. So this lust, Krishna analyzes more. the sitting places. Where is this lust? It's in the subtle, in the consciousness, in the mind, the senses. It's situated. We're saturated with lust, with material desire, and therefore we can't think clearly. Our consciousness is covered, like a mirror is covered by dust, like a fire is covered by smoke, or like the child is covered by the womb. What's the verse? Do you know? Ul bena avrita. What's the first line? Dumena avriyate va nir. The fire is covered. Yata dar shal malena cha. Ah? Then what's the next line? Yeah, that comes last. Tata avrita. Dumena avriyate va nir. Yata dar shal malena cha. Yatal bena avrita. Yatol Bena, there's one word. Yatol Bena Vritam Dharapas Tata Tenedam Avritam. Thank you. So, these are the ways in which the consciousness is covered by material desire. And in this way, we become a victim of the mind. Victim, we're not even aware of what we're doing. Just like we often hear, people are victims of the whole system, of education, in which they teach us all things which are actually bad for us. They send us to school, then we have to learn how to become a good citizen. Good citizen means you work hard. And if you can get a job, or so you earn money and you spend it. One devotee in Florida, he had to send his resume for something or other. His credit rating, no debts. It was considered something very bad. No, well, we don't have any debts. What's wrong with you? It means you're not properly functioning as a proper citizen. You should be in debt. Then you can be tied up and squeezed till you scream. So some people can see how they're victimized by the system. But the victimizers, they're also victims of their mind. Everyone, because the whole illusion, both victims and, what should we call them, predators, perpetrators, we're all victims of our mind. The illusion of thinking that we can be happy in this world. What is stopping us? Okay, so we all discussed all these things many times, right? But what is stopping us from being fully Krishna conscious? Oh, my mind. I can't get it out of my mind. I have all these desires. What's the solution? So Srila Prabhupada suggests here, as you brought it up this morning, we have to purify our desires. The mind processes input and applies desires to that, the input, what we see, touch, taste. Do I like it? Okay, accept it. Don't like it? Don't accept it. And it becomes more complex also, just like you may see an ice cream in the shop. I like it? Yeah, but I really don't have enough money. I can't afford it. Okay. If I buy that, of course now with a credit card, there's no... Yeah, I'm living in the past. That wasn't a very good example. I really can't afford it. I have to, I shouldn't indulge in an ice cream for myself because I have to have enough money to feed the family. So we adjust it. Now we like that. So it may be more complex, but basically we think in terms of what can I enjoy and how can I avoid that which is non-enjoyable or which impedes my enjoyment. So the solution to stop being a victim of the mind is to take shelter of Krishna, which means to channel our desires into the service of Krishna. Bhaja hure mana shri nanda nandana abhaya charana ravindare. Our mind should be placed at the lotus feet of Krishna, which means to worship Krishna, to perform his devotional service. Otherwise, our situation is that of serving the Durjana, Sevinu Durjana, Kripana Durjana. What for? For Chappala Sukalaba Lagire, for just a little bit of flickering happiness. So to stop being a victim of the mind, we simply have to take shelter of Krishna and change our desires, change the current of our desires from trying to enjoy this material world to trying to satisfy Krishna. That's a very, very simple formula. But actually it works. If we channel our desires to serving Krishna, then we become very happy. But channel our desires to serve Krishna means we have to fully give ourselves to Krishna. As long as we're holding back, then the mind will always have, come on, come on. There's always that, always, you can come, you can compromise with me a little bit. That's why it's good to fully give ourselves to Krishna. And then Krishna fully reciprocates with us. And we become happy. Everyone wants to be happy. Want to be happy? Yes, of course you do. It's insane. If you actually think I don't want to be happy, that is insanity. Everyone wants to be happy. How can we be happy? Very simple thing. Go to Krishna. Then we'll be happy. The example is that of a fish. It's a mundane example, but it demonstrates the point. If a fish is in water, the fish is happy. It's a mundane example because no one in the material world is happy. But if you take the fish out of the water, how they suffer and struggle? In the water, they're in their natural condition. So in the same way, if we're in the service of Krishna, we feel fully satisfied. Atma nivedana tua pade kare hoino paramashuki dukkha dure gelo chinta na rahilo chodike ananda deke. Bhaktivinoda Thakur describes that praying to Krishna, since I fully surrender to you at your lotus feet, I've become supremely happy. That's his name, Bhaktivinoda. He takes pleasure in bhakti. All distress has gone far away. Dukkha, no more anxiety. And in all directions, I simply see happiness. So that's a fact. Pratyakshavagamam dharmyam susukam kartam avyaya. We can practically experience. If we engage in Krishna consciousness, we become happy. If we don't, we feel miserable. And who can understand that the most? Those who have taken to devotional service and slacken off. Those who take to devotional service, often we see that they take to it, they're very enthusiastic, and there may come a point in which they take it for granted, and they think, well, now I'm very happy in Krishna consciousness, so, maybe I could, just relax a bit, have just a little sense gratification. Or, I've done enough Krishna consciousness in this life, enough for now, and now it's time to enjoy myself. Maya may come like this. But then they get trapped. And then afterwards they can experience, oh, I was so happy like that. Well, I was actually very happy serving Krishna. Even though it was hard in many ways. It may seem hard to the materialistic mind. Rising early, doing everything for Krishna, getting nothing in return. Seems you're getting nothing in return. Because materialistic people measure, what's in it for me? What's in it for me? But a devotee doesn't think like that. A devotee simply thinks, how can I satisfy Krishna? He never thinks, what will I get for myself? And Krishna reciprocates by filling his heart with happiness. He doesn't even think. Now we're discussing in a philosophical way about how it's for our benefit to be in Krishna consciousness. But the pure devotees, they don't think like that. They just think how to satisfy Krishna. Definitely they're full of happiness, but they're not calculating. Okay, I'll do this service, then I'll get happy. That's why I'm doing it. They don't calculate, they just do it. Their natural heart's attraction is like that. Just like in the normal course of events, a mother is naturally wants to look after her baby. Nowadays it may not be so much. But normally a mother would like to look after her baby. And the baby keeps her up all night, many nights, and passes stool all over her, is fully demanding. Baby is the embodiment of egoism. Just anything wrong, screams immediately. And the mother comes, but the mother takes pleasure. She doesn't think, well, I need to philosophically consider if I should be looking after that baby or not. Real mother doesn't think like that. But she hears the child crying and immediately runs to the child. She doesn't think, well, I've looked after the baby enough. I need a break. Immediately, she thinks, I have to. So, if we have that attitude in the service of Krishna, I see. If we have that attitude in the service of Krishna, then Krishna will reciprocate. The example can turn it around is Srila Prabhupada often cited that our chanting of Hare Krishna should be like a child calling for the mother. It means, Krishna, help me. And Krishna immediately reciprocates to the surrendered devotee. The surrendered devotee, there's no more struggle with the mind. We struggle with the mind as long as we contemplate how can I be happy on my own terms, as long as we want to set our own terms and conditions. That's why it's very good to take these rules and regulations of devotional service very seriously. Sometimes I say, well, you know, you just chant Hare Krishna. Hey, all these rules, you know, just it's like some kind of army camp or something like this. But the rules are required also. The rules, they're all designed to keep us engaged in devotional service and to help us to surrender to Krishna. For instance, rising early in the morning, you may not feel like it, but that's sadhana. We have a rule to do that. Okay, now we have to do it. Okay, so I'm a servant of Krishna, so I have to do what Krishna wants. I don't want to get up in the morning. Oh, but Krishna wants me to get up daily. So, all right, I have to do it. And then it becomes automatic. Or, there are so many nice things to eat and they're in the shops and they're probably vegetarian. So, I can take it. And I just have to remember to say a few mantras and then that will spiritualize it. But the thought is, for me, what I want to do, what I want to eat, instead of what Krishna, I'm a servant. I only take the food which is offered to Krishna. I'm simply a surrendered servant. Last year, somewhere in Texas, I gave an example like this of the wife who eats the remnants of her husband's food. Oh, I really, it was a college term. They didn't like this at all. The example backfired because they thought, you know, what is this? Women, what are you talking about? Women who take the remnants of their husband's food. And they didn't like that example at all. But yeah, the servant, the real servant of Krishna is not calculating how by serving Krishna, I'll do this much and then I have to get my payment and my separate life. And no, the true servant only thinks how Krishna will be here. And he may calculate also how I have to maintain my body properly, but only for the service of Krishna. Not that I will keep my body healthy so that I can enjoy life, but only for the service of Krishna. That's another reason why we have these head shaved and these unconventional clothes. It's not required to serve Krishna to have this, but it is an act of surrender to Krishna. Krishna, his representative, they like this. We don't like that sound, but anyway, we have to tolerate it. Now, all these things, this tilak that shows, this is Krishna's footprint. Krishna's footprint is on our head. That means we have declared ourselves to be under Krishna. We want to be under his control. We don't want to declare we're equal to Krishna or greater than Krishna. So all these rules, they help us to surrender to Krishna and they help us to control the mind. If we make the determination that, okay, my life is meant for serving Krishna, what do I have to do? All these rules are there. Get up early in the morning. Take food only offered to Krishna. Spend all my time, all my life serving Krishna. And it becomes second nature to do so. And all these are favorable for cultivating Krishna consciousness. And Krishna becomes pleased if we do that. So the very simple formulae for becoming Krishna conscious. Sometimes we think it's very difficult to implement. Really, can I really become free from material desire? Is it possible? Yes, it's possible. But we have to be very serious in our practice. It's not going to happen by a lackadaisical attitude. We have to be very, very serious. It's the highest gift is not going to come unless we're very intent and serious to take it. I was just asked today, it's about mercy and blessings, and sometimes devotees say, give me your mercy or your blessings, as if that, of course, they may not be thinking like that, but they may also be thinking that, okay, you give your blessings, and then, okay, I don't have to do anything. You do the work for me. You give the blessings, but you have to take it also. You give me your blessings that I can chant my 16 rounds. You have to decide to do it. It's not that, oh, you see, I'm not chanting 16 rounds. You see, I asked Swamiji for blessings, and I'm still not chanting 16 rounds, so it must be his fault. He didn't give the blessings. Blame him. I'm dead serious, but you know that Swamiji, his blessings didn't work. So it can be a kind of cheating process also to just ask for some mercy. But the mercy naturally comes to those who show themselves to be very serious. in practicing Krishna consciousness. As the saying goes, and the duck that quacks loudest gets the most crumbs. When you're feeding the ducks with breadcrumbs, it's a common pastime. Here in also, people like to do that. So if one duck is more insistent, and wah, 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 I'm not very good at quack, wah, wah, something like that, and comes up and is insistent, then they're more eager. So mercy is there for everyone. Krishna is willing to give his mercy to everyone. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has come to give mercy. But who can get it? Everyone can get it, but it comes especially to those who are eager to get it. Just like if gold coins are raining from the sky. You say, well, everyone can get it, but if you hold your hands, you can catch it. Or if you get a container, you can get it. So if you're indifferent to it, then you won't get it. It's coming. The rain of mercy is coming, but we have to do something to show our willingness. We want it. So the mind. How can the mind be purified? Vajahure mana shri nanda nandana abhaya charanara vindare durlabha manava janama satsange taraha e bhava shindu. By taking association with devotees, the mind becomes struck, becomes fixed in Krishna consciousness by associating with those who are not victims of their mind, by those who like to hear and chant about Krishna. It's a basic principle of advancement in Krishna consciousness. We have to seek good association. Krishna bhakti janma mool hoy sadhu sangha. Krishna bhakti janme teho puna mukhya anga. The very root of the awakening of Krishna consciousness is sadhu sangha, association with devotees. And even when we are in Krishna consciousness, we've taken it up, still association with devotees is a major consideration to associate with devotees. And we may think, well, I need a super, maha, mega, uber. That's a word in German, is now joined in English. Maha, maha, 1,000,008 Shris, maha Bhagavat. We may be fortunate if we get such association. But if we can find someone who's seriously practicing, trying to become pure, who's even a little more advanced, they can help us. And we can have association with Srila Prabhupada through his book. Srila Prabhupada said, if you want to know me, read my books. They're very powerful to study and follow. But take this good association, which is afforded by this International Society for Krishna Consciousness. Srila Prabhupada wrote that this society is being founded just to give, so people can come to take association. Take association also means we have to be prepared to take that. We can hold back also. We can come and, okay, I like it this much, okay, but holding back. We're holding back. We're afraid to give ourselves to Krishna. That Sharanagati, that verse, the last Atmanikshepa. No, actually, Atmanikshepa Karpanye. After that comes Karpanya, which means considering oneself to be very lowly. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, in his explanation, in songs of Sharanagati, put Dainya, the equivalent of Karpanya, great humility, he puts that first. So Atmanikshepa, that is a synonym of Atmanivedan. Atmanivedan means offering oneself. in the service of Krishna. But Atma Nikshepa literally means to throw oneself at Krishna. As you can just imagine, if you're in a house, fifth floor, and the building is burning down, someone is standing there, and you're afraid, who wants to jump from the fifth floor? Generally, people wouldn't want to jump. But then, either I jump or I burn, and you have to have faith the person can catch you. So we have to have faith that if I jump, Krishna will catch me. We're afraid to give up our attachments because we're attached to considering myself, I am American, I am Indian, I am male, I am female, this is my status, this is my home. We're afraid to give up. Throw ourselves at Krishna with the faith that Krishna will catch us. So that association of devotees who are making that endeavor to throw themselves at Krishna. What does that mean practically? Then what is that? That Shravana Kirtana Smarana Bandana Pada Sevana Dasyare Pujana Sakijana Atma Nivedana Govinda Dasa Abhilasha. It means to engage in the activities of devotional service. It's a very powerful process of which this hearing and discussing these points is most important to understand. This discussion, when we discuss these points, as I stated at the beginning of this talk, those of us who have been reading Srila Prabhupada's books for some years, we've all heard these things. Whatever I've said this evening, hopefully you've all heard it before many times. Nothing new. But at the same time, I hope that by hearing it, maybe for you, these matters are somewhat new. If you stick around, our friend from Vermont, maybe these matters are something new for you. They're not discussed generally in Vermont or anywhere else. Anywhere else in Detroit, maybe at two other locations in Detroit, house programs here and there. So, it's nothing new, but at the same time, I hope that by my discussing this, your conviction has become at least a little stronger, and your determination and your enthusiasm to go on with this path, your faith has become a little stronger. And by this, gradually, we become stronger and stronger. In the beginning, the faith is soft. It means not very strong. Jaha kumal shraddha shekha nishta jan krame krame teho hoibe bhakta utam. In the beginning, a kanishta means a beginning devotee. Their faith is soft. It means it's not strong. But gradually, they can also come to the highest level. Kramekrama means gradually they can come to the highest level. How? If they apply themselves to this process of Krishna consciousness. And if we have faith in this, according to our faith, we are classified. One who has faith in Krishna is a devotee. Shraddha vanjan hoi bhakti adhikari. One who has faith in Krishna and the process of bhakti, that is the qualification to take up bhakti. That's all. You don't have to be a pundit or a PhD or an Indian or a Brahmin. All you have to have is faith. And one is classified uttam madhyam kanishta shraddha anusara. One is classified as topmost, middle level, or beginner according to one's level of faith. So if one associates with devotees who have made this Bhajahuremana their mind, they've decided, my life is meant for serving Krishna. If we make us, if we associate with such devotees, then our faith will become strong. And we can immediately go from the beginning level to the Madhyama level. The beginning level, Kanishta Adhikari, means that he's worshipping Krishna but at the same time maintaining and cultivating many material desires. Remains on the, largely on the mental platform, which means he remains a victim of the mind. But one who comes to the Madhyam platform, the middle level, there's no more doubt that my life is meant for serving Krishna. It's just a matter of more purification is required to come to the highest level. But still, the Madhyam Adhika, it's not that, oh, okay, so, all right, I made it there, but he has to go on hearing and chanting and associating and serving. Otherwise, he may slip again. So, this discussion of the mind, we should be very careful. Never trust the mind. Don't think, now I have become a very great devotee. As soon as we think like that, automatically we're not. Always think, I am simply living on the mercy of Krishna and his representative. Yoga the bichare kichu nahi pai tomara karunasha. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, if you examine my eligibility for performing devotional service, what is my eligibility? If you look, you'll find, what's the report? Bring back the report, zero. Yoga the bichare kichu nahi pai, nothing. Absolutely disqualified. But your mercy is all. That's all. So a devotee feels like that. But he doesn't go on through this cheating process saying, well, it's all mercy and therefore I'm just lying back. He applies himself assiduously. So I hope we've all become at least a little bit more convinced, determined, fixed, enthusiastic, inspired to go on with our devotional service with the faith that surely, even though we should think like this, even though I'm unqualified in all ways, but if I try, then surely Krishna, who is very kind, will help me. Hare Krishna. Any question or comment about this? Yes, please. Ah, yes. Yeah, the relationship between the mind and intelligence, obviously they're very intimately connected. The mind, the function of the mind is to receive sensual impulses and to decide on a sensual basis for the sensually absorbed person, whether he wants to indulge in that or not. For most people, the intelligence, the real intelligence, is switched off. What we call the intelligence in material existence is a complex mechanism whereby we juggle various impressions that we receive through our senses and various concepts, and we juggle them and process them, but it's all on the basis of sense gratification. So what we call intelligence in material existence is not really intelligence at all. It's really a function of the mind. The intelligence is lost. Buddhi-nāśāt pranashyati. The intelligence is already lost and spoiled for people who operate on the platform of lust. Yāyato viṣayān pūṃsaṃ sangasteṣu pajāyate sangāt sanjayate kāmaḥ Everyone in this world is working on the platform of material desire. Therefore, their actual intelligence is lost. And the example is given of the horses are pulling the chariot. The intelligence is supposed to be the driver. But if the horses overwhelm the driver, then the chariot is out of control. So the intelligence that is supposed to be the proper, they're supposed to execute the proper discrimination as to what is, what should actually be done and what should not be done. The intelligence is supposed to control the mind. But when the mind overwhelms the intelligence, then the intelligence is lost. The intelligence is the real spiritual intelligence is the discriminating faculty by which we can understand what is actually in our real self-interest. And in material existence that works also, but in the wrong way, because we think, okay, it's in my self-interest to whatever. People may think it's in my self-interest to become a terrorist. Someone might think. Or someone might think it's in my self-interest to become a banker, or it's in my self-interest to be a post office worker, or whatever. We calculate what is for my self-interest. But really the intelligence has to be informed by hearing about what is our real self-interest. That we have to hear from the Srimad Bhagavatam. What is our, then the sense of discrimination can work properly. Otherwise we're on the Manoratham, on the chariot of the mind. This term comes up quite often. That's in relation to the example given in the Upanishads as the soul, the chariot is like the body, the senses are like the horses, the intelligence is the driver, and the soul is the passenger. So, if the senses, the five horses, they overwhelm the intelligence, then intelligence is lost. So the intelligence should be guided by the soul, by the passenger. The driver is supposed to drive according to the direction of the passenger. Here, go this way, go that way, be careful. But instead, if the intelligence is guided by the senses, then the passenger is lost in a very dangerous situation. How do you understand it? Krishna is in everyone and everything's in Krishna. Yeah, he's smaller than the smallest and bigger than the biggest. Doesn't fit the laws of physics, right? Well, that's Krishna. Inconceivable. He's inside everything, he's outside everything. Everything's in him. In another sense, he's aloof from everything. How is it possible? Not by any material means, but by his expansions. He expands in the form of Kshirodaksha, Paramatma in everyone's heart. In that way, he's within everything. And everything emanates from the, everything in the material world emanates from the body of the Karanadakasha Vishnu. And apart from that, everything rests on the Brahman, which is a feature of Krishna. So in this way, everything's in Krishna. Krishna's in everything. And in another sense, Krishna's aloof from everything. So this is to be understood by Achintya Bheda Bhed. Everything's different from Krishna. Everything is not different from Krishna. This cannot be understood by material intelligence. It appears to be a contradiction. For us, it's not possible. We can't even imagine it. That's why it's called achintya. But for Krishna, everything is possible. That's the point. That's why he is God and we are not. There's one reason why. Anything else? You had a question? Oh, it's down here. Okay.
How do we achieve?
It's one of those how-to questions. Remember, I answered one of them last night. How to? How do we achieve? What is it? Yeah. It's going to be the same answer as last night. How do we achieve detachment without losing compassion? When you have compassion, you feel attached. Yeah. Well, detachment means stone-heartedness. Could you explain that a bit more? What is your understanding of being detached? Detachment from this world means... Okay, I'm trying to work through this. Detachment from this world arises from understanding that I have nothing to do with it. Right? Is it? Detachment from this world arises from understanding I have nothing, I have no intrinsic relation with this world. I have no intrinsic relationship with anyone in this world. So we may become detached. But we should understand we have no intrinsic relationship on the material platform. But I have a very deep relationship with everyone on the spiritual platform. So the present way we relate to everyone, we should become detached from that. But becoming detached from that means... in Krishna consciousness means we should see everyone as part and parcel of Krishna. So we don't become so detached that we think we have nothing to do with anyone. Detachment in Krishna consciousness means... where is that? In the first canto, one purport said, Srila Prabhupada said, what is it? Negation of the non-essentials does not mean negation of the... Can we find that? Anyone has the negation? Look for negation and essential wildcard. Should be in the first canto purport.
Negation does not mean negation of the positive.
Negation does not mean negation of the positive.
Negation of the non-essentials does not.
Negation of the non-essentials
does not mean negation of the essential.
Does not mean negation of the essential. That's in the first canto, chapter 8, second chapter, 7th verse. What is that verse? Vasudeva Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Prayojata Janyatyash Vairagyam. Vairagyam Jnanam Chayadahaitukam. So Vairagya means detachment. We can simply translate it as detachment. So, there's the answer. So say it again, it's a... Yeah, read it again, yeah. Negation of the positive does not mean...
Negation does not mean
negation of the positive.
Negation of the
non-essentials
does not mean negation of the essential.
Does not mean negation of the essential. So we should become detached from... everything that is non-essential. Again, anukulyasya sankalpa pratikulyasya vajra. Understand what is real, become attached to that, and become detached from all misconceptions. So the detachment of the mayavadis is just to try to become detached from everything. But the detachment of the devotee is not to give up everything, but to give up the sense of I am the enjoyer of everything. Compassion on the material platform is another kind of illusion. To think I can help someone without having the relationship to Krishna, it's just another phase of material understanding. It's great misunderstanding that if someone is hungry, we may attempt to feed them. If someone is thirsty, we may attempt to give them water. But if we think that this is their ultimate benefit, then that's a great mistake. Ultimate benefit is to give them the knowledge by which they'll never be hungry and thirsty ever again. Otherwise, we can get in another kind of maya, the philanthropist maya, thinking, well, I'm doing so much to help others. That's false compassion. Who is the seer? This was a major point in Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's. Actually, he said this is the whole point of everything that he has to say. Who is the seer and who is the seen? Drishta and Drisha. Drig Drisha Vichar. So he very much emphasized the point that we are to be seen by Krishna. Not that Krishna is the object of our vision, but we are the object of his vision. But from another perspective, Drishtat, what is that? Drishtat Manishvare. That comes at the end of the Nashta Prayesha, all that series of verses. So in this, from another perspective, we should understand that I am the soul, I am not the mind or the intelligence or the false ego. The ultimate seer is one who sees that I am a spirit soul. In relation to our material condition, we should see ourselves as spirit soul. Ultimately, it's the soul that sees, touches, tastes, smells, feels, and hears. We are not the body, we're not the mind, we're not the senses. The experience, the consciousness is in the soul. So that's the first level of understanding. And the highest level of understanding for the devotee who wants to see Krishna is to understand that my desire to see Krishna, that should not be on the platform that Krishna is I worship Krishna to make me happy. But it should be on the platform, I'm simply a servant, and if Krishna is pleased to see me, that is very nice, but my duty is to serve him. You got that? Krishna is the seer, means Krishna is the enjoyer. If we think I want to see Krishna for my enjoyment, that's not perfect. The whole idea was, I'll just serve. If Krishna, Asli Shava Padiratang Pinashtumam Adarshanan, Adarshanan, Marmahatang Karotuva, Yatatata Vidatatu Lampatomat Prananatas to save another. Krishna may make me happy by embracing me, or he may make me broken-hearted by not showing himself to me, or he may crush me under his foot. But anyway, I'm his servant, that's all. And he's the Lord of my life. That is the topmost understanding. That we are to be enjoyed by Krishna. So we always say that you will be happy by serving Krishna. And it's true. But as much as we're thinking that, of course, in the beginning we work on that platform. But if we're to go up more and more, we have to come to the platform of stop thinking how I will be happy by serving Krishna. And more advanced is to think what Krishna wants. What does he want me to do? And not, even though the devotee wants to see Krishna, but he has no demand. My duty is to serve, that's all. May Krishna be satisfied. My satisfaction doesn't matter. But automatically the devotee becomes fully happy by having such an attitude. But again, if he thinks, I want to be happy, let me serve and I'll be happy, that's not the highest level. Okay, Hare Krishna, we'll finish here for now. 3, 2, 1, 0. Oh, okay. But two hands up. Yeah, okay, I saw you as well. It's the duty of the preacher to induce the offenders to chant Hare Krishna, yeah. To tell them the benefits of chanting, but the offenders won't, they'll be, therefore you shouldn't chant, preach the glories of the holy name to offenders, they become more offensive. So that's maybe not such a good idea. Somehow you get them to chant. That's for very advanced devotees can have offenders chant. Yeah. Okay? Okay, what's your question? Okay, we're getting way off topic here.
I think that when we're reading them, what's the way to read them?
What is the way to read the biographies of Vamsidas and Rasikana? I wrote in the introduction to Vamsidas Babaji, what is the attitude we can read?
Just not to enjoy them.
Yeah, I wrote, you look carefully and see. I already wrote how we are to read the biography of Vamsidas, and it applies for Rasikana. Go back, do your homework. Okay, so I'm supposed to distribute this, I presume, is it? We're all offered now?